What's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Behind the Wheel podcast. You know, when we do an intro like this, it means we got a guest.
Something special. And the headphones are a little bit of a giveaway if you're watching.
That's fair. I guess I didn't know about the headphone thing. I didn't think about
the
headphone.
You know, like, when we don't have the guest, we don't have
headphones. Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah. I just didn't think about it. But anyhow, so yeah, we do have a guest. If you remember not too long ago, we had William Rory on. We spoke about CAN bus systems, kind of what it means for engine swaps and some different things like that. But we also alluded to the fact that we were going to have him back on, and we were going to do another podcast where we actually talked about kind of his bread and butter, what he does for a living, but really specifically how it affects EVs and what is EV tuning look like now, and what is it going to look like in the future?
Yeah,
right?
EV centric podcast. If you don't want to hear it, leave now.
Yes, don't leave comments for me. It's not nice. But I will say this, from an enthusiast aspect, you know, the EV thing, whether it stays as a supplement or it becomes the predominant thing that the agenda wants, there is going to be a pathway for enthusiasts to continue to improve and make their cars better.
Yeah.
And I think that's the part that I've always been real into, right?
Yeah.
So, like, let's see what that means. So,
William, we have William Rory with us. And William, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. It's awesome to have you, man. And, I think it's really cool because, it's not like anyone here is an EV specialist or whatever it is, but, we get a chance to be with you. I meant literally here.
Oh, yeah.
I meant literally here. Like, we're no EV specialists, but like, we get to talk with you, which is that's what you do.
Yep.
And I think it's really interesting because basically, if you ever check out the automotive news and stuff like that, the only thing that's ever in the news anymore is EV related stuff. And people want to talk about it, people want to say stuff about it, but there's not too many experts out there, at least not now, because we're still kind of in an infant stage of EV vehicles. So, I know that for work, you do this stuff every day. Can you tell us a little bit about, what you do?
Yeah, exactly. Where to begin? So I think I have a good perspective in this because, like you guys said, we are all automotive enthusiasts. So it's kind of an interesting thing where we're getting, I don't want to say pushed, but there is definitely a change happening. And
there might be a push behind it too.
maybe. I don't want to say it, but we're all getting caught up in it. And so it's like, where do we go from now? Basically at work, I am, again, a senior electrical engineer, electromechanical engineer. So what we do a lot of design simulation, which is just as important as the actual calibration part of electric motors, mainly vehicle full EDUs. So whether it's for like large trucks, we do full, EDUs for Class 8 trucks, all passenger cars. Mainly there's three different types. I'll probably try to keep it to the most popular one because it's going to get really dry and make you guys head spin. But basically, permanent magnet motors and AC induction motors are the two big ones that I do. So.
Okay. So I think what's interesting here and my only real premise behind or my premise, not the right word. My only good base for this educated part of the conversation is the fact, do you remember a while back we did that podcast with AEM with Lawson from AEM?
I was not on that one.
So we had Lawson from AEM on the podcast. And at the time, before AEM was acquired by Holley, a lot of their focus was developing kind of the CAN bus / kind of ECU to be able to tune and add in a lot of these things. Now, their initial kind of fight wasn't in trying to develop something that would go, let's say, into a Tesla and control a Tesla. Their thing was, hey, you may buy a Fox body and want to put some sort of, electric motor in or do some sort of EV swap, or maybe you want to grab, a powertrain out of a Tesla and power, you know, something like this. You want to do something cool, and we're going to give you the ability to basically add, use this system to develop a CAN bus system and to develop, you know, kind of a control, a, you know, a battery control system and be able to, you know, manage these batteries. So it was cool from the perspective of if you wanted to swap something, you wanted to go to EV West and you wanted to pick up a motor or something like that, you could make this happen with what they were putting out. But this is not what we're talking about today. We're talking about, I bought a blank, and I want to say, what the hell with it? I bought a Tesla. I bought one of these EVs.
Yeah, yeah.
And what is the possibility that I could essentially, at some point, improve on it? I can make maybe more power, or change where the power is outputted, or how the batteries are conserved, or what's my range and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, good question. So, you know, already there's tuning companies, there's a couple in Canada, Mountain Pass Performance, that are doing your normal tuning stuff, right? Suspension, brakes, all that stuff. But mm-hmm. I think that's what everybody is worried about, right? Is where do we go from here? I want more power or something of that sort. So it's going to be a big topic. So sorry, let me know if you guys need me to stop for anything. But it's fundamental to know what your electric motor is actually doing and what controls it and where to go from there. Because if we think about it like normal tuning, where, hey, you know, if we just add more air, fuel, you know, right. Timing, you're going to make more power. It, fortunately, it does work like that in some ways, but it also doesn't work like that in some ways. So let's take your standard, we'll use a Model 3, for example.
Okay, mm-hmm. Fair.
So it's most of the ubiquitous car out there, really. I think yep. It probably is sold the most, as sedan-wise, at least. It has one, the long-range version has one permanent magnet rear motor, okay? So you have one motor, one inverter, and that makes a electronic drive unit, like an EDU. Okay.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, what you're doing when you program and you calibrate and you make these electric motors is you are regulating current. Okay. So what you do is let's look from the motor perspective. Okay. So the part that spins is called the rotor. Easy. This part that's stationary is called the stator.
Gotcha. Too so
easy.
Far.
Easy. Yeah.
Electric motors are easy.
I'm right? So far, if you've ever taken apart an alternator, you know where we're going.
That's
here.
Right. Yeah. I keep telling people electric motors are easy.
Yeah.
So the stator has copper coils. Basically, they're called windings. And long story short, if you run current in a sine wave through those, the car will spin. You will spin the motor. Now, the nice thing about it is that in this case, so you have, they're called three phases. So you have three phases of current that make a sine wave, right? You've always seen the waves. Mm-hmm. And in this case, they're always 120 degrees from each other. So there's actually a cool trick that we can do to make basically all of EV tuning come down to two numbers. It's called the ID and IQ. And that's basically your reaction current and your power production current.
Okay.
Easy. So there's actually, you do two transform functions. Okay, it's called a Park and a Clark transform. And basically what it does is, you know, the end goal of an ICE car maybe isn't to make as much power, right? There's a lot of efficiency and stuff like that.
Yep.
Well, the interesting thing about an EV is you basically get your best efficiency at also the same amount of torque, right? For X amount of current, you want the most torque possible. That's how you get the most efficiency as well. So in this case, you always want to be leading by 90 degrees, okay? So thus you can do this Park and Clark transform and you get two currents, your ID and your IQ, vice versa, depending on which way you're spinning. You get down to two values and all you're doing at the end of the day is controlling those. But the problem is there's really nowhere to go from there with the existing hardware. There's no making it better than what it was from the factory. If you do your simulation correctly, it's as good as it will get. So I think what we have to realize is that you might not be able to maybe tune an existing motor, but you'll be able to open up the limitations of it.
Okay.
So you mentioned the AEM stuff. So I've actually used one on the Tesla Model S.
Okay.
But I've actually used a bunch, actually. Just the control board, though. You can actually use it without the ECU, but that's a different story and probably proprietary. So they're able to open up the limits because in this case, I'm sure they had to sell, you know, the Model S Plaid or whatever, right? Can't have the normal one making 400 kilowatts. So anyways, they're able to open up the safety limitations current wise. And that's how you make more power. So I don't think things are completely lost. I think that we're going to be able to make power just like the good old days, but just in a different way. You're not modifying tuning. You're not modifying fuel anymore. You're not modifying those two currents. You will be opening limits, basically. Right.
So now, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I'm sure your question, I think it was about the spiral.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, you know, for the nature of what you do for work, I mean, how does that really go? So in other words, like, I know that you play a part in a lot of the OE stuff, and, you know, OEs will kind of have a car, and they'll say, hey, we're working on X, Y, and Z model, whatever it may be, and we need X, Y, and Z, which is funny enough, Tesla, but I didn't mean that literally, but, you know, we have these cars that we're working on. We need to hit this kind of benchmark with it, and they kind of just leave it in your hand more or less. And, you know, what's the process like from there? I mean, you're kind of left with essentially a halfway finished project. Is that more fair to say, or?
Yes. It's hard though, because things are changing so quick in that world. So a couple of years ago, it went from all these OEMs are purchasing these electric motors and the inverter from a supplier, right? Mm-hmm. So the supplier is doing all that stuff. Now they're giving it into the OEMs. The OEM's job is to put it in the vehicle, make it work, make it not vibrate crazy and all that stuff. Now we're seeing, on the other hand, now the OEMs are kind of catching up. And so now they're doing everything in-house. So like you said, a lot of times they don't, we're still trying to figure out what the best way to do these things are. I don't know if you guys have seen the new BMW IM or BMW EVs. They actually went back to brushed motors. They actually had, you know, like the old brushed DC motors.
Why?
So long story short, so you can increase the efficiency of a motor by reducing the air gap. Okay. So like I said, you have that rotor and the stator. Well, there is always going to be a air gap. Now it's not much. But for one thing, if a rotor is going 14,000 RPM, the air inside is going very fast as well. Okay, and I don't want to get super engineering into fluid dynamics, but at a certain speed, air becomes, it acts like a fluid, and you actually get quite a lot of drag. So there's losses from the air gap, but we don't use brush motors for anything because the brushes wear down,
right?
You know, and then you get dust. Well, if you got dust inside of a sealed motor, what do you do? You know, you're not going to,
right.
What, you hit 100K, you got to, replace your electric motor. Like, that's not, people aren't going to go with that. So apparently they designed some crazy coating. That's just one example of an OEM doing something completely off the board because there's no one knows how to do it yet. Hmm. No one knows what the best way forward is. So everyone's just, you know, throwing darts.
So how do they get the dust out?
Well, the idea is that it's not supposed to dust enough to matter.
Okay. Now, let's be honest here,
it's
folks.
It's BMW.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I remember the day that I had to bleed a more modern, you know, 3 Series and realizing that they had, you know, the overflow upon the overflow. And there's nothing German that's easy. And the fact that they just said, oh, it won't dust makes me, I want to call BS on this. They're just going to dust.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's what we do. That's what we do. So that's a cool technology. And now, so all these OEMs, they're like, how did they make it not dust? Or is it really, you know, did it really not dust? And they'll have us test it, right?
Oh, that's crazy.
Now, yeah. And now we're not going to be able to get a BMW to really test it, right? So we have to maybe get that motor from a wrecked car or something like that. We might have to make it run on our own controls. And so that's where we have to program our own e-motor. Because in this case, we're not testing the inverter. I don't care about the inverter. Right, we care about how that motor is designed and how they're able to get brushes to basically work in a modern AC, you know, asynchronous motor. So
what do? You just set this motor up once you get kind of the feel. You just set it to basically like it's like one of those longevity tests. You just run this thing until till the balls fall off, and then and then you open it up and go, yeah, there's a whole bunch of dust.
In that specific scenario, that's probably what we would do. Like,
you are an engineer at heart. Let me tell you,
I feel that way sometimes.
I will say, maybe we'll put some quantities to it, right?
Right.
We'll measure the stator weight before and then afterwards, right, stuff like that. But yeah. That's probably what we do. I hate to say it. So.
Yeah, that's wild. Yep. So I mean, I guess that's kind of. I wonder how long that takes.
Good question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I will say that's definitely, it's a very hot topic in the industry, right?
Okay.
You know, motors like that, new motor designs, transmissions are a huge thing. My God, that's the huge thing right now. You know, the Porsche Taycan had the 2-speed, right? So everyone is, you know, trying to figure out how they do it. Is it worth it? And obviously the answer is more complex than yes or no. But yeah, these are the things that we're just trying to figure out, and no one really knows the answer yet, which is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's important to point out, like, remember that, you know, what we're going through is different but the same, right? Like, when you think about even internal combustion engines, if you go back, you know, back to, let's say, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, there was a big change in the way where they did transmissions. And I mean, there was so many different types of transmissions and different things. And you know, and today it's slowed down with the internal combustion engine a little bit, just because, you know, there are some things that just have proven to be more efficient. And with time, you kind of, people get behind what's the most efficient, most economical, whatever it may be. Well, now we're going into a place where we're kind of rewriting that. So we're going to go through that period of learning all over again. And I kind of think that's what you mean. Like, that's where we're at again.
Exactly. Guys, remember turbochargers?
Yeah.
We made them ceramic for a little bit.
Yeah.
They broke after 10,000 miles. What were we doing? You know, like no one. So it's the same thing, and it's exciting, but things are changing really fast because of that.
Right. I mean, it's even like going, like, you know, from the technology point when Porsche started to introduce like the variable vane turbos and stuff like that, right? Like you're taking a spin on what was there, but then you're like, oh, wait a minute. We don't have to worry about putting on a turbocharger that's going to run out of steam. We can use this turbocharger throughout the RPM range, which I guess is done by tuning for those listening. But like, but it's a different mechanical piece that allows us to change essentially what the effective, you know, size of the turbine housing is, or that AR to allow more flow, or so you're controlling the spool and the efficiency range of the turbo by kind of directing these vanes and, you know, in different angles, right? It's pretty wild. So now I want to just double back real quick.
Double back.
I want to double back to, we're talking about that whole EV tuning thing.
Yeah.
And we got done with the complicated sine waves. Mm-hmm. We figured out that there's these two numbers that we're going to essentially boil this thing down to. But, you know, the one thing that I'm curious about is when we start talking about what we're going to tune, I want to know what those things are. For example, if you've ever driven, and I think let's base all of our hypothetical conversations on a Model 3 single motor, you know, standard battery life car. And the reason I'm saying this is because it's probably the most affordable out of the Tesla line. It's also probably the most prevalent, but
in
addition,
it's also the most popular.
Right. That's what I mean by. But in addition to that, I also think we can stay with one example to kind of base this on. So I get this car. Now, if you've driven one, you know that they're pretty good off the line, but they top out not too far up the range, right?
Yeah.
Does this allow us to now, with the tuning, maybe change kind of where that motor wants to top out at? Or what can we do?
Power delivery or?
So that one. So I'm going to break some hearts here. So that one's a tough one. So the solution there is higher voltage. Okay, so that's why. So Cybertruck's 800, Taycan's 800. Everything is going to keep going up. Okay, so the old Model 3s, if I remember right, they're about 400 or so.
Okay.
I hate to go more techie with you guys. I'll try to keep it very brief. But you know, when people say that, oh my God, electric motors have all their torque from zero RPM.
Yeah, instant power delivery, right.
Yeah, instant power delivery. But what they don't tell you, though, is that you have, let's say you have a dyno curve, right? So as your speed goes up, you know, torque's on the y-axis, speed's on the x. Well, you'll start at full torque, right? Mm-hmm. But you'll see as the car goes, like you can get, you know, dynos and Model 3s, right? They're all over the internet.
Yep.
It hits, you know, let's say a certain speed, which is in a motor RPM, but in this case, we'll do miles per hour. At 70 miles per hour, the thing drops off like crazy.
Yeah.
It drops off because it's hitting something called field weakening. Okay.
Okay.
So a Model 3 has permanent magnets in the motor. Okay. So they're able, it's so efficient because it has magnets from the get-go. You don't have to use any current to make your magnetic flux.
Got it.
Sorry, it's going to get pretty tactical here.
That's all right.
We're going to stay with you here. We're going.
So basically, the magnetic flux is what makes it turn. Easy as that. It's current going through the windings. So because you don't have to waste a lot of that current, generally you're more efficient, which is why those have become the prevalent motors. Almost everything's permanent magnet nowadays.
Okay.
So, but the problem is, though, is as you're spinning that, it is creating back electricity. Okay. It's creating voltage that's going backwards effectively and back into the inverter. That's not good. You need there to be a potential difference in voltage. So at a certain speed, the rotor is spinning fast enough that the voltage that the rotor is producing is the exact same that the battery pack is. Then what you have to do is you have to start using some of that current that could otherwise be used to make power to reduce it, if that makes any sense. So now that's why you get that huge, crazy drop off. That's why people use transmissions. That's a big thing. And that's why the Porsche Taycan, which is supposed to be a GT car, right? You're supposed to be able to go and take that on the Autobahn and it's, you know, it doesn't just fall off in performance, right? That's right. The idea.
That makes sense.
That's exactly why. So unfortunately, to answer your question in the most circular way possible, that one's going to be a hard one to do. I don't want to make any bad, you know, predictions. That one's basically going to be impossible.
All right. So then what about for the example, were you going to go ahead?
I have so many questions. I don't know where to start.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Then,
sorry.
I was going to trail off. You go ahead.
All right. So my question is in with a tuning measurement, right? Like, I mean, with a tune, the ability to tune these, let's say, battery control modules, management, whatever. I don't know what we're going to call them, but let's say we have this ability. Can we shift that power band at all, or is it really a permanent motor? You know, a permanent magnet engine. I mean, a motor is going to kind of be fixed. This is what it is. Can't really do too much to it.
Yeah. So that effectively, you can get more peak torque. So let's say again, in our hypothetical example, right? You can open up the limitations of, let's say, current.
Okay.
Again, if you can access the battery management system, BMS is usually what they call them.
Yep.
You could probably change the limits there. You could probably get more peak torque.
Okay.
It's going to drop off at the same point, unfortunately, okay. Unless you're figuring out some way to get more, like overcharging the battery. But at that point, like, there's some safety issues concerned over there. So
yeah.
we're going to have to be careful when we tune anything that has to do with the battery management system.
Okay. So the moment I come up on this and I say, all right, let's imagine we're 15 years away from today. Some of the first Model 3s now, they've been out on the road for 25 years. Okay. And I get one of these things for $3,000. Well, no, hold on a second. We're going. You know, like, listen. You got Civics that are 20. You know, like, let's get down there. So we got these Model 3s, and yeah, I'm sure somebody's, you know, they put a new battery pack in, or cells have gotten. We don't like this example. I can tell. But listen, I want to figure this out. Does that mean that at some point the modification in these cars that everybody's going to be doing is not the engine swap? It's going to be, they're going to be looking to try to figure out how to put a transmission into these cars.
Oh.
I can't tell the future. It's going to be really tough, but to your point though,
yeah,
I want to be like realistic. I'm a huge car guy, right?
Yeah.
That kind of tuning is probably going to go away. You know, I don't want to say that's a good thing. Don't want to say it's a bad thing.
Yep.
But that style of tuning is probably going to go away. Again, you'll probably be able to up the peak torque that you're able to get.
Right. But that doesn't help us extend it, right?
Exactly. I don't think you're really going to be able to get beyond that.
Well, I have a few questions then. I guess I'll stay on topic for right now because I have a couple questions that are off topic as well.
Yes.
But well, for you, for, you know, people who don't know you, I mean, you're also a Grid Life driver, SCCA driver. I mean, you're out there doing the damn thing, and, you know, true motorsports and car enthusiast. And even though you work with EVs, it's not like you go home to your Lucid Air or something like that, you know. So, but
I had a couple weeks ago. But
oh, cool! You had one?
I perks of the job. We get to buy. To drive basically every production EV.
So is it
now?
Good?
I have more questions, but
it's good. Do you want my honest answer?
Yeah,
sure.
Lots of things are good about it. Lots of things are bad. So we had a brand new Lucid Air GT, like the Grand. So it's the dual motor kind of longer range version. We didn't get the Sapphire, We had the old pre-refresh, the only 1,000 horsepower one. That one was pretty cool,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
that
one.
We had several paint quality issues. I mean, literally, like, you know, like orange peel in the like paint, brand new car. Yeah, there's some NVH issues here and there. I dynamically, it's actually probably one of the better or best EVs there are.
Cool.
It's more tuned like the Taycan. Dynamically, it it's a big SUV, but it actually feels quite nimble. I'm not a fan of almost all the other EV. They either try to make it like overly sporty for no reason. The Lucid is pretty good. They're really pretty good.
Cool.
They do have a lot of software issues though. I will say.
I'm sure other issues as well.
Yeah. A lot of the quality control stuff is what you're gambling with.
Yeah.
So I think the one thing that you know where I stand on EVs is that like, and this is my again this is my opinion. Right. I'd preferably not like this turned into a clip. Because I feel like, out of context, this will be a bad clip.
Go for it.
I know. But here's the thing. I ultimately believe that car companies like the BMWs and the Mercedes and, you know, and the car companies that have been car companies, I believe that they will eventually make some of the best EVs that are out there. Now, I understand Tesla's got an incredible lead on what they got going on there.
Yeah.
But when you get down to the real true car enthusiasts, and this is why, like, I've heard people say things like, oh, Tesla's going to, you know, put all these car companies out of business. Here's why I don't think so. Because a lot of these companies that are coming up with EV only, like, they've only done EV. They're
Rivian,
developing
Lucid,
EVs.
Whatever.
They're technology companies. And I think they're going to do great things for the space that will continuously have automotive manufacturers adopting different pieces. But I ultimately think at the end of the day,
you
a company like
cars.
BMW, they build cars. Yeah. And they know how to build cars. And they're good at building cars.
Can I sneak a question in there for real?
Yeah.
Okay.
Could
you ask it's a tough thing. That's the hard part. I will say Elon said that himself. That part of it's hard.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Max is asking a question. Okay, I didn't hear the first part of his question. You're going to have to, Rich.
Does Lucid have that step up over the other EVs?
Well, I would say no, because they can't paint a car. So, yeah.
I might have missed that full question, but I think I got part of it.
Yeah.
Lucid has one of the best motor designs out there.
Okay. Period. So,
yep.
And I believe that part will become, but like the same way, listen, I don't care what you say. I don't know who's doing it, but like the same way companies that you work for are reverse engineering these things to find out what's good, what's bad. There are going to be OEs that are doing the same damn thing. Like, I just can't imagine that won't happen. So at the end of the day, you know, like obviously their IP, their proprietary patents and different things like that. That's going to be the kind of the strong point on this. But, you know, patents are, you know, kind of a tweak away from being able to be a different process. And all of a sudden you're taking the premise and it's being applied differently. So you'll have those Apple and what was the other debate? The lawsuit that went on, Samsung.
Oh, okay.
Right. So like, I think those are going to come, but like when it comes down to making vehicles and making cars, I mean, like, I'm sorry. Like the one thing I really struggle with Tesla, as much as it's cool that you're driving a flying iPad, right? Like as cool as sometimes the driving experience can be, there is this other piece where I look at the car and I can look at the car and go, but the cars doesn't have the quality that I want when I buy a car.
Yep.
Like they're just not like I'm telling you that like there's pieces in there. I'm like, this is not like when you pull back the carpet and the stuff hiding some of the things, you will not be super happy with what you own.
Yeah.
Maybe that will change, but a BMW knows what it's like to build a car. Like Porsche knows what it's like to build a car. And so now the EV thing, in my opinion, and I want you to comment on this, is I think making an EV is way easier than putting in an internal combustion engine into a car. And I think it's way cheaper. I think they're going to find a way to make more profit on these cars and charge you more money than they have ever done before. And I think they love this. Feel like I'm on the right pace or am I off the ball?
Yeah, I'll comment on that for sure. So not taking any, like, let's say external You know, obviously there's quite a push in the government.
Of course.
But for the OEMs want it too, guys. They are cheaper. They are easier to manufacture. Less parts. I mean, literally, the motor is just two bearings and then your differential. That's it. It is incredibly cheap to do. So, and now again, they're moving it all in-house as well. So now they can, you know, control the manufacturing part of it. OEMs want to make EVs.
Yeah.
This is what it is. It's to their advantage. They will make more money per car to make these EVs at the end. So that's definitely a push for that too.
It's crazy.
I had the question.
It's
now,
the biggest conspiracy ever. And I don't believe in conspiracies.
Well, it seems like there's some proof there, so.
I'm telling you.
Well, they'll never say that, though.
Saying they should. And I'm not even saying they shouldn't be allowed to, again, I'm not against EVs. I'm just against how fast we're trying to get there and what we're getting there and what the steps we're taking to get there are. It's an incredible supplemental vehicle option that should be on the realm. All right.
Nothing
more. I won't say anymore.
But I'm gonna circle back to a question that I had. That was when we were talking about the peak torque and the kind of the fall off of torque in the EVs when tuning them or whatever it may be, or looking at their maps or whatever. You know, when you go out to the track, I mean, you can actually see people who are racing EVs now on the track. And a question that I just have is like, if you're out there and there's a bunch of people who are driving Model 3 performances or whatever that is on the track or whatever, are all these guys going to fall to the same limitations or like, you know, it's not the same thing. You can go see someone at the track with an Evo and you don't know exactly what's going on with that car, but is it going to just leave you with just like, oh, that Model 3, they're all the same and they're all going to run similar numbers and the difference is going to be based on maybe just, driver performance, tires, I don't know, suspension settings or whatever it may be. Will it be that shallow?
I would imagine, I would guess maybe the quarter mile stuff is probably identical. Yeah. You know, there's not too much you can really do with an EV. What, you push the gas better than someone else? Like, that's about it. So I think in the road course world, I think the gap between Evos taking the driver out of the component at all, it can be, it can literally be the fastest cars in the world, fastest time attack cars in the world. And then, you know, a bone stock Evo 10, right?
Right.
The gap's huge.
Yep.
I don't think that's going to be the case. The gap between, you know, a modded Model 3 and a not modded Model 3 would be much less.
So, in my sense, when I think about performance gains or whatever, the first thing that came to my head, if I had a EV and I had to put it on a track, the first thing that comes to my head is weight reduction. And, like, how much does that play a role in terms of when you're trying to achieve certain numbers or whatever that may be? I mean, do you guys factor that or look for that?
Yeah, definitely. But keep in mind as well. So like it's all percentage gain based, right?
Yeah.
So if you can pull 100 pounds out of a 2,100 pound Miata, you are getting a lot more than pulling 100 pounds out of a 5,000 pound Tesla. Right.
Understood.
So, but yet like the gains are still the same, right? So you can actually a lightweight battery, a lightweight 12 volt battery, to be fair, is a popular mod for Teslas. That's what they do. And you can drop 30 pounds, right? Which is, you know, it's substantial. I have done that in my time attack car. But when your car is 4,800 pounds, it's not as substantial. So yeah, definitely. I mean, less weight is always better for a racing period.
When we talk about performance though, with an EV, I don't want to say simple, but is it as simple as when we start talking about how fast a car is and how far, let's say how far that power band can extend, is that motor technology, and when we start talking about range and the ability to kind of power those motors, that's all battery technology?
I don't want to put a number to it, but for the most part, there's a couple things to it. So you hear the meme that electric motors are what, 99% efficient?
Yeah.
Do you hear people say? Okay, we gotta maybe we'll debunk that here. Okay, so maybe
let this
it
be
is
the clip at, out, guys.
Yeah. I hope not, guys. So maybe it's 99% efficient, and that would actually be pretty high, by the way. Maybe it's 99% efficient at one speed and one load, right?
Okay.
So one torque.
Yeah.
Generally, guys, they go down to 60%, 50%, stuff like that. So we have to be clear that there is still a range at which that motor wants to run, and that all comes down to motor design. You can create the windings differently to make different back EMF, whether what motor design it is, whether it's AC induction or permanent magnet. Yeah, it's there's a lot to it, but that's all. It all factors into it.
So in a more realistic sense or whatever, what I was thinking is that, like, for what you do for work, I would mm-hmm. imagine there has to be, I'm going to just give a fake scenario, but
sure.
As an educated guess, I would imagine some scenarios might go something like this. You have an OE and they're going to say, we're going to be looking to release this car in the near future, whatever it is. If we're not hitting 260 miles per charge for range, we're going to get flamed in the media and people are going to call it a piece of garbage. And, you know, we're only getting X amount of right now. Can you guys help us? Is what I would imagine some conversations go like. And then, you know, I'm just curious, what are the steps that you guys take from your company to kind of make it happen for them?
Yeah. It's actually quite a realistic thing because you actually hit it within 5 miles of a company that we've actually done.
There we go.
That,
see?
That. Yep. It's really funny. A couple steps that we got to look into, right? So, there's definitely a bunch of factors that you can do. Again, there. While it is hard to tune an electric motor incorrectly, I would also argue that it's hard to tune it correctly too. So, like, there is ways that you can definitely increase efficiency, and then also there's sacrifices that you can do that would make the car, let's say, louder. So you can actually do a lot of techniques with your calibration. And I'm talking about vector control. There's some other control strategies out there, but anyways, that will reduce noise level, but increase efficiency and vice versa, or the opposite. Mm-hmm. So you can do a lot of that. So that's the first thing that we look into. We'll look into the power electronics. We'll probably want to tear down a motor, see if there's any actual design changes we can do. I mean, the big thing is battery tech too for that stuff. Some of them will come to us and they'll say, we want 25%. Guys, like 25% range increase, you're just not going to get like that. You're talking about small percentages of increase to a well-tuned electric motor and a not well-tuned electric motor. But, you know, again, this is what we're going with. If all these motors are 95% plus efficient, a percent matters. So yeah, you can go through and you can do that stuff, but a lot of companies are not understanding right now that to get the 25% that they need to be competitive, you're going to have to change some architecture.
Listen, I get this funny vision in my head of you make some people feel really bad because they have their R&D team and they go, we did it. We got this as much as we can do. And they go, well, that's not good enough. Let's go ask these guys. They get the car back from you guys. And they look at their engineers and they go, what the hell? Why couldn't you guys do that? That's that weird, funny thing I see in my own head after, you know, that scenario.
It happens. We do it internally too. You know, sometimes like we'll send a project off and like we'll get another one from another customer. Like, why is that so much better than what we just did?
Right.
So if you're the biggest thing about engineering is A, I guess we'd like to argue, but B, if you're wrong in an argument, you got to be able to accept it and try to learn from it. If you're not here to learn, I just don't know what you're doing. Right. Especially in this space. There's very few experts in the electric motor field. There is, but if you think you're an expert, generally you're not yet. So you got to be pretty humble with it. So there's still a lot to learn, and that does happen for sure.
So before we start to wrap up, I want to break this piece out. I'm going to ask you to pick up that crystal ball for a second. I know it's not your job, but I'm going to ask you to try. With the knowledge that you have, let's say we get to a point where the equivalent of an access port or a pre-developed tune package is something that can essentially be uploaded into your EV that you have that's bone stock. What different things do you believe will be user-friendly on the screen that you can change within to affect the actual speed, performance, etc. of a car? What kind of things do you think will be in that program, or what things can we change?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing that I think, and companies sell thousands of these a year, throttle mapping, right? Throttle mapping is easy.
Okay.
You know, and again, I think to that point as well, I want to point out, you talked about AEM. So, I don't know if you guys knew, but there was two different types of Model S motors. Mm-hmm. There was the sport and the base. Okay. The only difference between them technically is a little power electronics. It's just the calibration.
Oh, wow.
So there's things like that. Now, there's scenarios like that where you might be able to plug in your hypothetical access port device.
Got it.
And upgrade to, you know, let's say the higher model or something.
Got
like
it.
That.
Okay.
There's going to be some platforms that share motors, but they don't want to cannibalize sales on the higher stuff. or the chassis is not capable, or, you know, 50 other different
reasons.
Yeah, but throttle mapping is an easy one for sure. And again, you might be able to go up to a higher model of things, and which really just opens up the limits effectively. Yeah, so stuff like that. It's going to be probably pretty limited. But also, hey, less things people can break too. So.
Right. So you think the throttle mapping, I mean, you mentioned something with noise. Do you think there'll be a quiet mode or, I mean, louder mode? Not really. I'm trying to think of anything else here.
Yeah, it's such a, I go to the SAE conferences every year, and it's still very much theoretical at this point.
Yeah.
Like we are doing variable switching frequencies. So your inverter takes your DC power. So DC is flat line, right?
Yep.
And then it switches. It uses switches. And that's how you get your wave. Okay. It's switching it so fast that it actually ends up starting to look like a wave.
Got it.
So you can mess with that. There's a lot of efficiency to be gained with just changing the switching frequency. You can make it, again, sound better in some cases. A lot of the NVH stuff is you want to keep it away from a resonant frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So there's times that you'll be like, I'm going to go time attack racing. I don't care about that. Give me this, you know, a cal that doesn't matter at all. Maybe it's the base switching frequency that doesn't change. Like stuff like that could potentially be possible.
Okay.
But it's going to be it'll be a learning curve for all the tuners, right? All these big tuning companies, it probably won't be picked up by standalone guys because it's a lot of theory.
Right. It's interesting. It's like, it's also tough because it's like you really are starting to get to a point where, at least at this juncture, the level of EV tuning is really all in everything you can do to a car except for speed. Like you're kind of in that realm of, yeah, you can make the suspension better, you can make handling better, you probably can like shave some weight, arguably will make a difference depending on the total vehicle weight that you have. But it's not like there's going to be battery swaps and, you know, and all this stuff. And you're going to be like,
do you think there ever will be any kind of like plug and play?
What's that?
Like, do you think there ever will be any kind of like plug and play type of like, performance mod, I guess, or whatever it may be in terms of,
probably depends on the platform too.
Well, you said it's about wattage. So I guess additional wattage. I don't know.
You plug additional wattage in.
I don't know. I'm not the engineer.
It'll be hardware limited. Yeah. So it's potentially possible, right? So here's a good example. The older Gen 2 Priuses.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They have an aftermarket battery pack that you can literally plug in. It works just fine with your existing battery management system, and you literally get more power and range. Okay. So it's not impossible. It's definitely not impossible. I would imagine that the demand for that, like development wise, won't be there until, like, let's say, all these Model 3s get really old and they start actually, the battery packs start dying.
Yeah.
So far, we haven't seen that bad of degradation. Actually, the whole industry was pretty conservative and they're actually kind of pulling back on that. It's why the OEMs had such low range for a while. Tesla was much more aggressive with their strategy for that. So
not surprising.
Yeah, exactly. So everybody's kind of catching up again,
but
that's one of the many reasons they're ahead for so long.
The biggest fear I think I have for these cars, and I know this is kind of going off the realm of tuning EVs, but like, is that you're going to get to a certain point where the car has lived its life expectancy, and at least at this juncture, the battery, to replace a battery or some of these parts, is just, it's not, it's basically totals the car. Like, there's no point in actually doing this stuff. So what we're really going to see, I think, pop up as time goes on is essentially these electrified, you know, like the electrified garage, like Rich Benoit, what he does. And you're going to start to see, these shops pop up that are essentially going to be hoarding these parts and have the ability to try to give you a much more cost-effective way to keep your car on the road. And I just think, man, could you imagine? You buy a car, the battery lasts, let's say, 80,000 miles. You go, you go to wherever, and you say, hey, and they're like, oh, yeah, like, I know your car, you bought your car with the rebates for $42,000. If you want to change this battery, it's 26. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah.
You know? So what do you do? Junk the car. Where are these batteries going?
Yeah, I got some bad news for people, too. The majority of the, when you recycle a battery, let's say you recycle a laptop, phone, anything like that, we don't usually reuse the lithium. It's actually so cheap that it's not used. Usually when you recycle it, the plastic housing is what's actually recycled.
Wait. You're
saying that blow your mind?
They don't reuse the lithium?
Not really. It's so cheap to mine that the recycling process.
But wait a minute. But they're saying so much of what we're hearing is about the crap of this mining problem. And
yeah, I don't know what to tell you guys. It is. I mean, keep in mind, lithium is one of the most abundant elements on a planet, right? So, I mean, yes, but right now it's so cheap to mine that a lot of the again, when you recycle a battery pack, it's mostly the plastic housing that's being reused.
I'm absolutely. I don't know if I should be more angry. All right, look, I can't say how much I appreciate you for coming on these past two times. I think I have to go take some Pepto-Bismol. I'm like, really, yeah. I don't know if I'm like more. I'm just not happy now.
It can be depressing, but here, let me flip things up really quick.
Yeah, so, end it on a good note, would you?
Yeah, we'll do. So I'm a huge car guy. Like I said, we got, you know, seat time in almost every production car. So things are not looking bad for enthusiasts. Okay. So we have some of the best enthusiast cars that are being built right now. There's potentially EV enthusiast cars. I don't know if you guys have been the Ioniq N, 5N.
Yep.
Is looking really good. We don't, you know, not a lot of US journalists have got it, but it's looking really cool. It's got like a simulated DCT and like, it kind of looks like a meme, but everybody that's driven it loves it. And they actually end up using the DCT mode. So, you know, that's cool. And then on the flip side, 15 years ago, you could not buy a car that was track ready from the factory, right? Barely any, almost none. Now there's maybe 10 that I can think of that you can go on track basically all day. We're talking about the Camaro SS1 LE, C8s, you know, any of the 911 GT products like the Elantra N. So I think as we get to the point where a lot of these EVs are, we'll say, consumer cars, they're appliances, really what they are, or tech products, we'll say.
Yep.
The remaining enthusiast cars, I think we're already seeing them getting more and more hardcore. All right. So there's a good quote out there that said the best thing that ever happened to horse racing was the invention of the car. And I think that's and I don't think now pricing is probably not gonna go down on enthusiast products. We've seen that through COVID, right?
Yep.
Any enthusiast cars, unobtainium. But they are getting better, they're getting more hardcore because they're not your commuter car anymore, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think everything's doom and gloom.
It's interesting. We're not gonna listen. I thank you very much for coming on. I think it gave me a dose of reality on and things that I learned that I was a little bit more hopeful for. But I also think it gives me an accurate sense of where things are. But it's interesting, you know, the one point that really I think I take away from this is that, you know, while, you know, because look, an engine also has a power band, quote unquote, right? So like in theory, like you're starting to see like there is a potential that through gearing and transmissions, some of these cars could really potentially be reutilized, I guess, in this motor base. I just don't know exactly how, you know, I don't know that they've gotten there. But like you said, like BMW and Porsche, like they're starting to come out with these cars that are have transmissions. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's coming. That's definitely coming. There's a lot of again, you got to know what you're making your car for, right? A city EV is not going to need that. They're all going to be one speeds, but performance car probably going to need it.
Right, Scott's car
needs transmission. That's right.
Yeah, there you go.
Listen, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. Hey, like, you have anything you want to promote? Any social links? Anything cool? Any services? You do coaching? I mean, what we got here?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a part of a YouTube channel, actually. It's my brother's. It follows our racing and just general car shenanigans, right? It's called Patty Boy on YouTube. Okay. And then obviously you guys know we're doing our own kind of let's save these cars from the junkyard thing. When Porsche blows up and it's more expensive, the engine's more expensive than your whole Porsche. The Tuning by Nick, right? We're currently selling our K-Swap kits. So go hit him up. If anything doesn't work on the electronic side, you can complain to me directly.
Oh, geez, nice. That's a big one. Watch out, they'll clip out. Next thing you know, your address will be popping up on the bottom of a clip. I think that
would be.
So, and yeah, it's good, man. We're gonna. I know there's gonna be more conversations and maybe even some projects that we could kind of ask your guidance on because aside from the Nick thing, which is like, man, I've been looking all over. I'm looking, you know, it's really hard to find a blown. Like as easy as it is, it's really hard to find a blown engine. Yeah. You know, 911. There's plenty of people that will spend all the money in the world to take a good old, you know, Lacasil engine and try to get it fixed or whatever it is. So, yeah. Anyhow, we'll be in touch, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Thanks for having me.
Dude, thanks for coming on.
William, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thank you.
So, I think, listen, I'm... I don't know if Max ended it or not. Oh, good. I'm still on. I don't know what to make of this one. I think I was a little bit more optimistic that we were going to get all these reports of all the cool things you can do to EVs. I think I'm a little bit more sad now. But I think the basis here is, you know, this may be a great thing for standard modes of transportation at some point. But if you're looking for something super dope, you know, maybe there'll be some...
It seems like you're going to have to be relying on the OEs.
Yeah, I mean, at least to pave the way of some of these, you know, more complicated, you know, like you said, architectures and different things that may lead to some different capabilities. But if nothing else, remember that you need to really look out for all the cool cars that are around now.
And hoard them.
And up to 2015, if you haven't watched the CAN Bus podcast that we did with William, go back and watch it. We talk about how you could put different engine modern platforms into other vehicles and what kind of, you know, technology is required to do it and make it operate seamlessly with your factories, you know, computers and CAN bus systems. So that's pretty much it. You got anything else you want to add?
I'm good.
Good. We're out of here. Take care. It's been nice seeing you. We'll do this whole thing next Wednesday. Don't forget to come back. Yada, yada, yada. Catch you later.